I'm a having a nervous breakdown. The middle shakedown. I see my hands how they shiver. Woo! I see my knees how they quiver. My whole body's in a tither. I'm a having a nervous breakdown.
As our sketchy defending continues to worry us, we're all having a nervous breakdown. It's the Day Trippers. It's week three of our preseason podcast, and with the American tour concluding last night against Louis van Gaal's Manx, the Redmen have only one match left before the big kickoff. We'll throw an eye back over the American trip, and we'll preview the game against bearded wonder Jurgen Klopp's Dortmund. We'll focus on the alarming amount of injuries to key personnel and ask how that may affect Brendan Rodgers' plans. We'll speculate as to what the opening day personnel and tactics are likely to be, and we'll talk remaining transfer targets and recent acquisitions with Jay Riley and Joe Simpson. Ireland's monsoon season has seen only partially alleviated conditions here around the bunker. So here sweating with me today are Dave Thomas, Phil Casey and Andy Young. Right, first up, let's talk about the US tour, which concluded last night with a final of sorts against Manchester United. Reputedly, Liverpool will have banked a very tidy sum for having reached that stage with wins against Olympiacos, City and Milan, and a useful run out from most of the squad. So it's safe to say that it's been at least a qualified success, but there are definitely some concerns as well. Okay, so let's start with a look at that United match. What were your overall impressions? Who was good? Who was bad? And what did we learn from the game? Jay Riley, your thoughts?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I thought we played quite well in the first half, and I thought, like, you know, we dominated the game and really did deserve to lead. And, you know, the second half was a little bit of a shock, really. It was like a double whammy, the two goals that United scored, and I thought, like, we controlled it for large parts of the game. I thought Coutinho and Sterling were absolutely outstanding. I thought defensively, even when United had any chances, I thought Sacho was outstanding at the back as well, and he made a great challenge early on, didn't he, when Hernandez nearly scored, and obviously he cleared it. But, you know, obviously I thought we played quite well, and it was disappointing really to lose the game, and I know it's all about fitness, it's only pre-season, and it doesn't really matter too much losing the game, but let's be perfectly honest, we never like losing to Manchester United, do we, whether it's a friendly or not. But I thought, like, what was intriguing in the first half, United are playing this system that Van Gaal's, like, you know, set up with Holland, and obviously he's implementing it now with Manchester United, and they're playing the three centre-halves, and I think they've done quite well in pre-season, United, but I thought in the first half they really struggled because Liverpool pressed them. They really pressed them high up the pitch, and they were giving away silly, you know, knocking the ball out of play, making errors, mistakes. And basically, Liverpool forced them into that, really. And you've got to look at their three centre-halves and think, you know, Johnny Evans, Phil Jones and Chris Smalling, you wouldn't have any of them three in Liverpool's team, would you? You know, you've got to look at it and say it was disappointing in the end, because as I say, second half to concede three goals, and I think what was glaringly obvious was Liverpool were outstudded your front. I think Lambert really struggled. I mean, although Liverpool did play quite well, I thought Lambert was just totally off the pace. He didn't really get involved at all. And listen, I'm not having a go at the lad at all, because he's being brought in as a backup. He was a cheap sign, and ultimately he's better than Aspas because he's more suited to the league. But I really thought he struggled last night, and he struggled in the whole of pre-season, really. And I think, like, what my fear is with him is he's probably looking at it, and the confidence levels are probably low now because he's missed a penalty. And, you know, the thought of he's at Liverpool now, it's a massive football club. And it seems to me as though it's playing on his mind that maybe he's thinking the football club's too big for him, and he needs to snap out of it, because ultimately he might be called upon at various times this season, because footage is injury prone, as we know, and that's why it's vitally important Liverpool dip into the transfer market to buy a forward.
Yeah, absolutely, Jay. I think you're right there, and we will focus on Ricky and a few of the other guys and their contributions as we go on. Dave, as a kind of a counterpoint to that, sort of more downbeat look at things from Jay there in terms of Ricky Lambert's contribution. What was good that you saw coming away from that match last night, if you can get good from a United defeat?
Well, I thought for 55 minutes we were really great. I mean, I agree with Jay. I mean, I actually, you know, watched it again today. I thought we should have been 3-0 up before they get the goal. You know, Sterling should have another penalty. Henderson misses a sitter of a header. You know, Coutinho has a couple of chances. I thought that, you know, we created some opportunities without really kind of carving them open too often. I just thought our overall attacking play, you know, pressing them and forcing them into errors was really strong. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought Lambert was actually a little better yesterday than the last two games. I thought he linked up quite nicely. I thought he played a couple of nice passes. Look, I agree with Jay. I think his confidence is, I don't know if it's confidence or, you know, Phil and I have talked about this mental block that he's got around. You know, he's delighted. Everyone keeps talking about it being his dream move. Well, he does need to move past it being his dream move into being a reality now. You know, he's got to turn up and start playing. You know, he probably needs a goal, or he needs something to go for him, an assist or something like that. But for 55 minutes, I thought we were great. And then after we conceded the two goals, I just thought psychologically there was like almost like we just went, it's a friendly. We're not gonna kill ourselves here to go and get back into it. Which I was actually a little bit disappointed about. I thought psychologically we should have kicked on again after the Mata goal. You know, I think the first goal was poor. You know, I'm sure we're going to talk about it, but Skirt was going to win that. You know, he's got to win that cross. And I don't think Mata scores his goal if Emre Can is on the field. I just don't think he gets that space at the end of the box. So for 55 minutes, I thought we were great. And then, you know, for 40 minutes, I thought we were pretty poor. But it's pre-season, so, you know, can't get too downbeat about it.
Is that fair enough, Phil Casey, in your estimation, a kind of two-section game, 55 minutes, and then thereafter? I know afterwards you were about as unimpressed as I was with the whole thing.
The goal is the single biggest moment in the game, where their equalising goal, because up until then they had no change out of us at all. Even in the first 15 minutes of that second half, or sorry, first 10 minutes of the second half, we were all over them. There was Sterling had gone through brilliantly, and I had the one that was deflected just wide of the post. About 2 minutes beforehand, we've been up the pitch and we've been in a dangerous position with a free kick as well. So their goal comes out of nothing. Like, outside of the chance they had in the first half where Sacco does a wonder clearance as such, they never really threatened us in a real effectual manner. So, you know, that's it. But just going back to the overall piece around the tour itself, like, these things are designed for getting fitness levels up. The one thing that I've seen is that, again, we started like a train in the first half in the United games, and we started like a train in most of the games that we did, you know, played, with the exception maybe the Roma game, where I didn't think we were great through the 90 minutes, but that's understandable because they were acclimatising, what have you. You know, you're seeing a logical progression, but I'm also seeing a lot of similarities to pre-season last year, where we were very good in the first half of games, especially in the first half of the season. And we gradually, it wasn't until the second half of the season that we could see the team put in the same type of press, hard press in 90 minutes. And that's probably the one thing that was lacking for me. I didn't mind some, look, if you lose games in pre-season, you lose games. It's, the result isn't all important, but, you know, it is United and you want to win that game, blah, 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 all that type of stuff. But at the same time, you want to see the team being able to press the way it was able to relentlessly press them in the first half, and that didn't really happen in the second half of the game. And we seemed to drop deep, and I was amazed when I saw the fabled possession stats after the game. United had more possession than us over the actual 90 minutes. And had you looked at that at 50 minutes, you would have said no way that was going to happen, because we had all the ball and they couldn't get the ball off us. Great things that came out that have come off this tour, I think, and you know, let's be positive about a lot of stuff as well. The emergence of Jordan Ibe, even though he did my fucking head in last night, right? The emergence of him is brilliant, because, you know, he did my head in trying to do the right things. He was aggressive and he was, you know, decisive in what he was attempting to do. Whether it was the right decision to do those things, I don't know, but he was prepared to take on players and try create chances. Chan over the course of the actual preseason has been brilliant. Jordan Henderson has gradually worked his way back into form as the preseason has worn on. I didn't think he was brilliant last night, but I thought he was getting back to a level that you'd accept as a good Jordan Henderson game. You know, the Sterling, obviously, standout. The kid is just fucking amazing, right? His ceiling, God knows what a ceiling is at this stage. You know, you're looking at him, you're saying, he can basically do anything. He ripped that defence to shreds, the United defence to shreds. Him and Coutinho in the first half, despite, similar to Jay, I thought Lambert had a particularly poor game, and I thought his performances have gotten worse as the tour has worn on. And it was really Coutinho and Sterling who did the damage in the first half and anything that we were doing. And you know, you just look at him. He should have had two penalties. The first one's nailed on. The second one is even fucking worse, like, do you know what I mean? Mm. And it's great seeing the kid emerge like the way he is, especially when we've lost Sturridge, especially when we've lost so much attack and talent, which I know we'll talk about later on. But, you know, lost so much attack and talent to still have this guy who's already a world-class kid, if you know what I mean, in football, who now looks to take it on and keep going and keep going and keep going, and potentially maybe one day reach the level that Suarez was for us,
yeah,
if he continues on the progression the way he was.
Joe Simpson, would you row in behind what Phil's saying there, and that overall there's quite a lot of positives to take from the tour in terms of certain players emerging?
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, I totally echo what he said. I mean, the likes of Sterling and Coutinho, you know, particularly Sterling, there's always a worry that maybe after last season, you know, looking like a potential superstar, that after that, you know, he mightn't come back and look exactly the same. Obviously, with young kids, it's not always a clear upward curve, but he's come back and he looks like he's ready to go up a level again, which is just amazing considering how good he was anyway. And then you look at the likes of him and Coutinho and you think, you know, they're both potential superstars, you know, that They're like, when people talk about getting hold of young talents who before the superstars, they're like, you know, prime examples of that. And we've got them.
Yeah.
Our system suits them perfectly. And then you've got another one coming through like Hive. And it's just, you know, I think we've obviously lost Suarez, but there's some amazing talents still there. And the good thing is they're all young, but a lot of them are young.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. What was your thoughts on the defenders on display on this tour? How many of them would you see starting the match against Southampton?
Well, it's a weird one, really. I mean, what I would say is I'm really looking forward to Lovren. I think he's going to be a massive addition to that team. And in terms of who's impressed me other than that, surprisingly, it's probably Coates or Coates, however you'd say it, really. I think he's looked quite good, but
yeah.
I think the danger with this type of tour is it probably suits him. I think the things he probably struggles with more is the sort of English game, aerial bombardments and things like that. So although he's impressed me, I've still got question marks, you know.
Look, the elephant in the room is the performance of our left back from last night and our nominal right back, first choice right back in the squad, Glenn Johnson. And there's been a lot of talk today about his performance and an awful lot of chat about not knocking him and the usual rigmarole. Let's have a balanced view. How did he do?
Well, I don't know why you're coming to me for a balanced view. I thought he was appalling. Yeah. I mean,
I suppose I'm setting you up.
The reality is I have a reputation of being pretty positive about most people. But I mean, I think Johnson's decline is worse than any other player of that era that we talk about. It's worse than Lucas's. It's worse than Agger's. It's worse than Reina's. And you know, and all of these guys have got absolute pelters, you know, for years about their decline. I'm genuinely worried about our right back position. You know, I think that the things that Johnson does well, he does too infrequently for them to be to offset the things that he does badly.
Yeah, no, that used to be the case. To be fair to the kid,
yeah. I mean, Johnson was always a guy that, you know, you'd hear the cliche: he's great going forward, but he's a bit suspect going back, right? Mm. But that it used to be the case that he was so good going forward, and he actually going backwards wasn't as much of a problem as it is right now.
Mm.
But now he isn't great going forward, and we don't need him to be as great going forward anymore because we actually have Gerrard sitting in that role and going wide earlier, with players dropping deep to get the ball. And the problem you've got is that, you know, particularly at the moment, until we sign a top-class left-back, he is our senior fullback. He is the one side of the pitch where we shouldn't have to worry. Mm. You know, you can understand worrying about Jack Robinson, or you can understand worrying about Flano, But, you know, if Glenn Johnson is a 29-year-old international, played at several international tournaments, played at a Champions League level, we shouldn't have to worry about that side. So the fact that there is even a debate as to whether Flano starts at right back or Johnson is a massive indictment on Johnson.
Dave, there's a debate as to whether this new kid who's just in the door might even get a chance at Johnson. And it's not a logical debate, but it is nonetheless a debate being had by some humans, which shows you exactly. Yeah.
Listen, you talked about the elephant in the room. I'd play fucking Dumbo right now before I play Glenn Johnson. So, I mean, the reality is, and I know people are going to say that, you know, we do Johnson too hard, but he's not even trying, and I know that's a cliched thing, you know, that of course he's trying, but he's not learning from his mistakes. And when a player stops learning, when a player stops having the capacity to get better, then there is only one way that he's going to go, and if he's only going to go one way, we have to upgrade on.
Phil, at what point on the tour did you realise that Johnson would not be stopping crosses and would be getting caught in possession going forward, and therefore was not a good bet for the rest of the season?
When we discussed England's chances in the World Cup in the preview, where we said that teams would identify Johnson and his inability to play as a fullback, as such, because he doesn't do the basics of a fullback. He used to be a strong attacker, and he isn't anymore.
He gives them one of our best.
Do you know what gets to me, right? And it's a genuine thing that really pisses me off, and it's probably why he annoys me so much, is that when he loses the ball up the pitch, he fucking trots back, right? He turns and he trots back. And you could see it for their third goal last night between himself and Lucas. And look, I've done this to death on this because it keeps happening. And it's the same thing over and over and over and over again.
Mm. It was the two of them trotting together in stereo that really sort of cemented it in your head, didn't it?
But it's not. He had an appalling game. I think I said at halftime, all he needs now is to take a foul throw to cap off a fucking the most imperfect first half I've seen from a fullback.
Yeah, it was shocking.
It is. And, you know, it's harsh on the fellow, but it's something that Dave said. And I said the same thing about Lucas in the first couple of preseason games I've seen. They don't seem to give a shit. They seem to know that the writing is on the wall for their careers at Liverpool Football Club, and they don't seem to give a bollocks on the pitch anymore.
So you're seeing a motivational issue there?
I cannot see any other reason why you can't break your bollocks to get back and track a fella.
Yeah.
I just cannot see how it is, right? I'm just wondering, is there something there? Is this going to be a last minute deal, maybe to QPR or something, to see him out the door? Because if we do sign Manquillo and we do sign Moreno, there's no talk of Jose Enrique leaving, right? And I don't think they could get rid of Enrique anyway, because I'm not sure he'd know where to go or anything like that. He's well embedded. He's happy out, like, he's playing FIFA.
He's just running around in Liverpool somewhere.
But no, seriously, I've seen people start to say before the game, you know, Johnson can't be any worse than Enrique at left. Well, he was. That's how fucking bad he was. And, you know, people are talking today about Reina losing form over 3 years for Liverpool, and, you know, him going, it's not that big of a deal. He wasn't as good a keeper. Johnson's performances are worse than Reina's performances ever were for us.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, like, you know, anyway, and that's not to get down. You could go into the in-depth of his performance last night. He gave the ball away. Positionally, he's bad. He doesn't know where he's meant to be on the pitch. And that's, for every other player that we have, for the coaching levels that Brendan Rodgers has brought to the side, the way the team plays as a unit, for a fella to have him to fucking breeze where he should be.
Yeah, looking indisciplined, which is terrible.
60% of the time is a fucking massive issue.
Well, I think the reality is that, you know, there is no way that Brendan Rodgers is looking at that defence and the massive changes that he's implementing this summer. We are going to sign this summer at least one centre-half, a left-back and a right-back, right? At least one right-back. And probably a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So there's no way he's looking at that defence and going, actually, right-back is sorted. I think there's a couple of problems. I think Johnson's difficult to shift, right? So
He can't run.
I think there's probably a gamble going on in Rodgers' head going, I don't want to buy a right back and then have to pay Johnson to sit on the bench, right? So I'd rather take a gamble on a youngster like Manquillo or Flanagan and find you can carry his wages then, which is, look, it's not how I would do it, but I think that's probably how the club are looking at it. If I was a betting man, I think that the last 2 days of the window, Johnson going, it would not surprise me at all.
To see a lad leaning out his car window.
Honestly, I mean, he is made for Harry Redknapp.
I think, Jay, you reckon he's going to be first choice for us, don't you? I'm not talking about in terms of form or anything, but just in terms of from the options that's there and the likely choices that Brendan will make.
Yeah, I do actually, to be honest, because let's be perfectly honest about it. Rodgers does quite like him, and it's strange to us because obviously we can see his poor performances. But yeah, you know, as far as I'm aware, Brendan Rodgers likes him, and he's on big wages, isn't he? So yeah. I think it's just a case of, you know, he will play, he will start the season, and I think he's brought in this Spanish kid now to give him a bit of a kick up the arse, basically. But, you know, obviously he's not going to be ready straight away. I can't see him being ready straight away to just go straight into the team. So Johnson will start the season, I imagine. Yeah. I know Flanagan is also there in contention, and Martin Kelly's played there in pre-season, but for me, I think Kelly's looked awful. But with Flanagan, it's a strange one with him because obviously his natural position is a right back, but I think he's performed better as a left back for Liverpool whenever he's played. So, again, you know, like with John Flanagan, I think he's more of a squad addition than anything else. And to be perfectly honest, yeah, I do genuinely think Glenn Johnson, he definitely will start the season. But, you know, let's hope if this Spanish kid's any good, he can dislodge him.
Yeah, well, Jay, if we take it there, and like, look, everything needs to be counterbalanced by saying that, yes, at one stage, and a lot of people here would have said that Johnson was a properly excellent performer for Liverpool, and that's what makes it all the more saddening and annoying, really. But if we take it that he is going to start, and look, another reason why he might start is just the barrage of injuries that we seem to be suffering at the moment. We've got Sturridge, Alala, Markovic, Barini, Agger, whether he's coming or going, all apparently crocked. Joe, is that a worry to you? If in a worst case scenario, we have Sturridge, Alala, Markovic, all out on the opening day. Is that something that would concern you for Liverpool's chances against Southampton?
Yeah, definitely. I think particularly the Sturridge injury, obviously we bring someone in to replace him because I sort of see Lambert as like an ideal third choice striker, but I wouldn't want him to be our second choice. So I think he's more than good enough to be third choice, but I wouldn't ideally want to see him be the second choice. So I think that's the key injury for me, that really, obviously, it's the focal point of the team. It's what all the rest of the players play off. So I'm hoping we can bring someone in so that if he is still injured, we've got somebody of a higher quality who can play. And that's not a criticism of Lambert. I think he will be a good third choice striker. I think he'll do a very good job for us in time. But I think he'd benefit, particularly with all the hype and all his history with Liverpool and his family and all that, a lot of pressure there, I think, for him. I think he'd probably benefit coming in a bit under the radar, coming off the bench a few times and things like that.
For sure, yeah. Dave, is that somewhere that you are as well in terms of a little bit of an anxiety level about the level of injuries that we have at the moment pre-season?
I don't know if I'm... I don't think Sturridge's injury is that serious. I think Rodgers has confirmed he'll play against Dortmund. I think that...
Is it not just, though, the nature of the fact that he has one already, the fact that he hasn't been able to take part in pre-season, and also that we got this new kid who seems like he's made out of jelly as well?
Well, you've got to remember, Sturridge only played 45 minutes of last season's pre-season, and then he scored in his first 7 games. So I'm not overly worried about Sturridge and his ability to recover from injury. Actually think that he's had to do that through his entire Liverpool career. I mean, I think there's an overriding worry about Sturridge's injury record. And, you know, for the record, if we go into the season, you know, if the window closes and we go into the season with Sturridge and Lambert as our, you know, if we don't sign another forward player, I think that that's a big, big error from the club, but I don't think that'll happen. In terms of the rest of the injuries, I mean, I think the concern is Markovic, you know, because, you know, Phil will know more about these types of injuries than I would, but, you know, it seems to be a tendon problem. You know, they keep suggesting that it's only a small tendon problem. I'm not sure if you can have a small tendon problem. I think you either have a tendon problem or you don't have a tendon problem. I think that the worry is, does that turn into something that's a little bit more long-term? But again, this is, you know, the advantage of the summer business that we've done is that our squad is better. Our squad is a little fuller. You know, we're able to carry an injury or two. We probably can't carry four, you know, so you'd hope that one of them would be back and that we'd make at least another forward signing. So I'm a little bit anxious, but I'm not overly worried about it. I mean, I think that it's the nature of these preseason tours. You've got to remember some of these players either went to the World Cup and then have had to travel another fucking God knows how many miles into a different climate, into a different condition and setup. Or if they're the subject of transfers, sometimes they don't get to take part in the very early preseason with their old clubs, which is a lot of that's around conditioning and muscle building and just getting them back into shape. So it's not a massive surprise that the people who are injured tend to be either in the World Cup or some of our newer signings, because they've had one of those problems.
Trev, just like, you know, some of our attacking hasn't been great in pre-season, but I think the most important thing to remember out of this is that if our defending was better, again, when we conceded goals in pre-season, we conceded twos. We didn't concede ones, we conceded twos, right? And the longer we continue to concede twos, the greater chance we will have of not winning as many matches as last season. Purely because, and it's all part of it, it's like you cannot keep winning the number of games we have without Luis Suarez to bring up the goal tally, as we've done, you know, with the defence that we have. And look at last night, we conceded two in a minute. We then concede fucking, you know, two against Roma. We conceded two against Manchester City. Not good goals, sloppy goals. And it's all sloppy goals. Like, again, we were the two. Like, I know the third goal happens last night, whatever happens, right? They're trying to push to get an equaliser in the last minute of the game. That shit happens. But if you look at the fourth goal, again, it was a quick transition which fucked us over. Joe Allen gives away a stupid ball in the middle toward the pitch. He tries to spring a ball from left to right. Yeah, from right. It gets cut out. The ball is given to Herrera. Herrera plays one pass. It's whipped in and Rooney scores. It was three passes, basically, from the moment that Allen loses the ball in midfield. Three passes and it's in the back of our net. And that's one thing that we suffered with all last season was quick transition. Mm. Quick transition killed us.
And I think that, you know, just on the defensive side, I think that is, whatever we think of him, I think that's one of the reasons he's bought Lovren, is that Lovren is a little bit more organised with the game in front of him. And I think he would hope that between Lovren, I mean, think about who might start against Southampton. You would hope that we'd have a new left back, Moreno would start. Yeah. I think Lovren will start, because if I think back to when we signed Sacco, we signed Sacco on the last day of the transfer window, then he played against Swansea.
Yeah.
And then I think that we'll play Emre Can. And I think if we play Emre Can, we don't concede two of those goals last night, you know, probably three if he's on the pitch. So from a defensive unit perspective, you know, I think there's some hope there that we have not played anywhere near what is our strongest defence yet on pre-season.
But just on that, it's injuries haven't cost us defensively on this tour.
No.
The same issues as last season has cost us on this tour in terms of defence. You can accept it that we haven't scored as many goals, and we may have scored more goals had we had our full quota of new attackers that we'd signed between Markovic, Lallana, etc., 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 right? But that hasn't been the reason why we conceded the goals that we did.
Well, just to clarify, what are you trying to drive at there? Are you trying to say that there's an absence of a clarity in regards to the system, that no matter who plays, they should slot in?
No, I think, again, it's just players players defensively were deficient. And we haven't improved on that if we're playing the same back five or back six that we played last season.
So you're not seeing a coaching or a systematic problem. You're seeing individual.
Well, it's individual. It's individual errors. Going back to last season again, right? You look to see, is it a system or is it an individual thing? When the system works, when there isn't individual errors, it looks like a great system and we're rock solid. And we tend to keep clean sheets and not concede many goals. When we do concede, it's individual errors and it happens. You know, something clicks in the head. I'm thinking back to last year when we went to Cardiff and we conceded two goals very quickly. We went, you know, we conceded two goals in a minute last night. We played against Manchester City. We conceded two goals quickly after the restart at half time. All of them, we keep clean sheets in those games and they aren't draws.
Well, you spoke about the goal, the quick transition goal, the counter-attack goal, the first one that they scored against us last night, their equaliser. Can you put that down to individual errors in terms of not stopping across, in terms of not dealing adequately with Rooney, in terms of Mignolet really being beaten when he shouldn't?
Yeah, he was going off his back foot as well, so he can't get the spread across. But like, again, it's just they exploit the space. You know, there's a level of system. There is a level of system. Like Saka was poor. You know, Johnson has pushed on, and you know we've said that Johnson was poor in the game that he was, and he was right. But Johnson has pushed on the way he'd expected. We were in possession of the ball at the time. And Allen loses, like, gives the ball away across field, right?
So there's a gap.
So Johnson is out of place. Sacco then is covering as the forward pulls out. Now Sacco allows the cross to happen. Now there is a question: is do we allow crosses to come into our box too easy? And I think we do. And I think we've always said that we have. And hopefully, the bringing in somebody like Glover maybe solves it. Bringing in fullbacks maybe solves it. But if Moreno is an attacking fullback, which he is, he's going to be in the same place as Glenn Johnson was when that ball breaks down. So it's up to the defensive midfielder and the two centre backs there to cut out that issue. And it like, you know, that's not that's players slightly turning off and not getting close enough to their man to prevent the action from happening.
Yeah. Skrtel's got to win that header. You know, all else fails, Skrtel's got to win that header. Yeah. I mean, that's the reality. You play a high-risk system, which we're always going to play, you know, which is about fast transitions and about, you know, being on the offensive, looking to break. You're going to get caught. So, you know, the best... If all else fails, Skrtel's got to win the header. I mean, that's what I kept thinking, looking at it. I mean, I watched it, you know, and I just thought, Skrtel's got to win. I think everyone thinks Skrtel's going to win that header. How does he not win that header to let Rooney score? So I think that's the individual piece of it. So there's the system will always have flaws in it, but the individuals have got to step up.
Joe, I wanted to talk about this, the idea of these kind of tours in general. You know, the idea of the financial realities of them against whether or not they're actually really good preparation. Where do you stand on the idea of these big monster pre-season trips to the far side of the world? Are they what you would see as a necessary evil, or is it something that's a little bit nonsensical that we could be avoiding, do you think?
I think I'd have to say I think they're definitely a necessary evil. I think with the way FSG are and with the way we're set up now, obviously we're not going to deficit spend. We haven't got a sugar daddy. We want to compete. And I would say our main asset, obviously, is our history. And I hate talking like this, but obviously it's just the realities of it. Our main asset is our history and this global brand. And I think we either... join the race to carry on being one of these massive super clubs, which we obviously already are, or we fall behind. I also think, you know, and the romantic in me, I do love the idea that, you know, fans across the world do get to see Liverpool. And I know sometimes we can be a bit dismissive of that, but I do think it's a great thing to give them that opportunity too. But ultimately, just on terms of the financial aspects, I know fitness-wise, I'm certain Rodgers would probably rather not do it. But I think for the long-term health of the club, if we want to ultimately become one of these, like, essentially financial juggernauts, which I think is probably the only way we can really compete with your Chelseas and your Cities, is by doing this. I just think it's got to be done, really.
Fair play. I think that's pretty much the logical way of looking at it. All right, Joe, to be fair. If I was to ask you, did you have one tour highlight, like something that stood out for you, whether it's a player performance or whatever. What did you enjoy of the last couple of weeks in the States?
I think it would have to be... I know they're not the team they were, but I grew up, and to me, the team from abroad was AC Milan. And although they're not the team they were, they're still a massive stature, a massive club with some, still got some top players. And to see Jordan Ibe just monster them was just fantastic. And at such a young age, to be so unfazed is just brilliant.
Yeah, I think that was pretty class for everyone. Jay, what would your highlight be of the tour so far?
Well, I'd just like to say what Joe's just said there. I mean, I agree with everything that he said. You know, obviously, it's not ideal in the sense of, I'm sure Rodgers wouldn't want to do all the air miles that they've had to do, you know, travelling across, you know, the States. But obviously, it's a marketing tool for Liverpool. And if we want to keep up with all the, you know, the big clubs out there, and obviously Liverpool are a massive club as well, but, you know, to generate the cash that we have to do to stay up there, you know, it's a necessity. We have to do it. But as I say, for a highlight, you know, a little. I know it's as I said before about the Manchester United game last night. Ultimately, it's only a friendly, so it matters not the results. But it was nice to get a little bit of revenge on Man City. You know, they pipped us for the title last year, and it was good to beat them. And I thought that was a great game, especially in the second half. I thought Sterling was outstanding, and we should really have won it in normal time. Shouldn't we? The goal that he had disallowed was debatable whether it was offside or not. But it was just nice to beat them, put down a little bit of a marker. But I'm sure the United fans will say they put down a bit of a marker last night by beating us. But, you know, it was just nice to beat them. And it was, you know, let's be honest, in modern times when Liverpool have won trophies, we've won on penalty shootouts, haven't we? So, again, it's always nice to win a penalty shootout. Like, so even though it was only pre-season, I enjoyed that game the most.
Fair play. And the younger tour highlight, what was it?
Yeah, it has to be Sterling. Sterling and Emery Chan. Two players has really excited me. Pre-season friendlies
they won't do an awful lot for any Liverpool fan or any fan of any club. But to see the performances out of them two players really excites you with the season coming, you know. In terms of the tour, I've no problem with it. It's like, the atmosphere seemed to be relaxed amongst the players, and Rodgers in the press conferences, they seem to have a bit of fun and whatever. So floating around America before the season, don't see an issue there. Like,
fair enough, fair enough. Dave Thomas, to your tour highlight.
Two of the jump out. One is Emre Can putting Balotelli on his ass. Pretty spectacular. I mean, my man love for Emre Can knows no bounds at this point. I'm pretty confident he's the greatest player we've ever seen.
Excellent.
And then my semi-serious one is Pascoe's face after Lambert misses the penalty, which there is a camera angle of the bench, and Pascoe kind of does this face like, I'd have scored that.
Put me shorts on.
I felt bad for Lambert, because God, I mean, I was willing him to score, but when I saw that picture of, just go and have a look at it if you haven't seen it, he hardly moves, his face hardly moves, but he kind of goes, I'd have scored that.
Phil, highlight for you.
Just on the tours in general, of all the tours that we go on, because like, if you think back to last year's, we were playing fucking Ragball Rovers and stuff like that, right? And I know they have to, it's great to see them going out again, it's for the fans, and it's the global brand and everything, right? But I've actually enjoyed that this tour, it was against, you know, big clubs. And I think the whole tour, and even the pre-season games beforehand, it's been built up so much to get us used to that idea of Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday type football, to get us back into the swing of the Champions League thing, and allowed Rodgers to learn how to rotate teams and stuff like that, and who was capable of coming in and coming on and making a difference in games, and how they'd fit then for the next 90 minutes of starting a game of the following week. So I think the tour is, for that reason, it's probably one of the better ones I can remember. The insomnia for having to watch the matches, I feel sorry for all the lads in Asia and stuff that have to get up in the middle of the fucking morning and watch games. Jesus, man, that'd do your head in.
Yeah,
absolutely. Highlight was Lucas and Ricky Lambert in Dunkin' Donuts. They are two players that don't need to be in Dunkin' Donuts. Dishing out the Dunkin' Donuts all over the shop, that was like, just, you couldn't have picked them any better. Yeah. All they were missing was Charlie Adam poking his head around the corner, Colo Torre style, just to give us, you know, a Boston cream shot there. Hey! That would have been sweet.
Another bit of laugh, actually, watching the Rooney up in the fire truck, like a Make a Wish Foundation. You know, players went around in a Chevrolet car, you know, the camera on them, it just looked like
it was like that scene in Zoolander. Do you remember when they turned up at the fucking petrol station?
then to tip it off, like, they're all getting pictures out, like, at fire trucks, you know what I mean? And Rooney opened the driver's seat, like, Make a Wish Foundation. So that was all right.
I mean, Rooney, fucking hell, he is the baldest man with hair you're ever going to see, isn't he? I mean, like, that is the worst hair transplant I've ever seen.
Second hair transplant.
The second, I mean, he is like.
Oh, he's done it twice, has he?
Yeah.
Oh, my Bless God, him. It's appalling. I mean, he's not an advert for the technology, really. Like, you know what I mean? No, really, no. He's not a use case. You know?
Like, whatever about us and Dunkin' Donuts and Pizza Hut or whatever the fuck it's fast food places. Subway.
Yeah.
That, you know, you took the biscuit there. So let's all laugh.
It's always good to laugh, you know, to finish something out. Right, okay, I suppose we should move on then, have a look at something that's kind of obsessing an awful lot of us at the moment, which is the movement in and out of the club, and we should have a little bit of a chat about who has come in so far, who is yet to come in, and who we would like to come in. So there's only one place really to start this chat, I suppose. We spoke earlier on about Ricky Lambert's comparative struggles last night in Danny Sturridge's absence, and we wanted to think at the start of this little section here about strikers, which ones are possible, which ones are unlikely, which ones are utter nonsense. There's been mentions of all sorts of clients, from Balotelli to Benzema to Boney. Seems to have to start with a B, but it looks good. Jay, as a man with his ear to the ground, who looks likely and who would you like? Which is two completely separate things.
Well, to be honest with you, it's very difficult. I don't mind Boney. I don't think he's great, but I do think he's decent and has got a very good goal scoring record. He's done very well at Swansea last season. And I'm just not sure whether he'd suit our system, though. That's my only concern. And he obviously couldn't play as a wide forward, so he is pretty one-dimensional in that regard. But what I heard with Boney was he's definitely being considered. you know, that's a certainty. But apparently his agent's a little bit greedy and he's asking for big wages. Now, I don't know specifics on what type of wages he's asking for, but the way I see it, he's meant to have a clause of around £19 million. And I honestly think if we were desperate to get him, we would have got him by now. So it makes you think that there is other targets, you know, like that we're looking into. Now, I heard a little rumour about we considered Callion from, or whatever, however you say his name, from Napoli. Mm. But what happened was, basically, we wanted to offload a couple of our players onto them, you know, like Rayner and Lucas.
Yeah, and Johnson.
Johnson as
We've
well.
We've got a skip load here for you, lads.
Hey, Rafa.
Obviously, the problem, though, with Rayner is he's gone to Bayern Munich now, hasn't he? So that limits it to just Lucas. And I don't think Rafa's too keen on having Lucas. But there's been a few looked at. I mean, there's the French lad, Lacazette, is it, from Lyon? Yeah. He's being looked at, but as far as I'm aware, no bids being made or anything like that. So you are struggling, really, and there's a couple of people out there who do know a few names, but everyone's keeping it, like, you know, close to the chest. They're not, the cards close to the chest, they're not revealing much. So I think that leads me to believe that there is something brewing. It's just that the club are trying to play it down a little bit because they don't want any mistakes to happen, because time and time again things happen where leaks come from the club and then it scuppers deals. Podcast a few weeks ago about interest in Higuain, nothing came of it. I do know that we spoke to Benzema's agent before the World Cup, but all the indications were that he was going to sign a new deal at Real Madrid, but he hasn't actually signed a new deal yet. So but we are struggling. I mean, someone mentioned the Argentine kid who's at Inter Milan to me. His name escapes me. Icardi, is it?
Icardi, Mauro
Icardi, yeah.
I'm not too sure about him. He's a strange one to me. I've not. I don't even really know who he is, to tell you the truth. But someone mentioned him to me, so he's always possible, I suppose. But like I say, it is intriguing who we get.
Andy, for you, who might be that centre forward? Who would you like to see, or who do you think's realistic?
Well, I'm one person that's glad that Remy didn't sign. I just don't like the player. I don't like his attitude. I don't think he would have been kind of game ball for what Rodgers wanted to do. Given the choice between him and Boney, I'd prefer Boney. But given the choice between neither and just look elsewhere, yeah, I'll be looking elsewhere. It's going to be a difficult one because, you know, everyone like wants to see Sturridge being the main man now. Mm. And any player that comes in now is going to have to accept that. So what sort of tier of striker are you looking at? I mean, I don't think it's any way possible you'd bring in Benzema.
Well, that's what I was going to say to you. Jay's done the job for us there of going through who the potentials and the likelies and the links are. If you were to pick a shout that doesn't need to necessarily have any basis in what we can or can't achieve, what kind of level of player are you looking at that's actually currently available?
Well, I sort of said that we should pursue an agreed of City there, yeah, a while ago, whether they'd sell or not, but he's wasted there.
Mm.
You know, another name I heard, going a good while back, which could be a realistic one, is that Uruguayan fella,
Kevin Mendes.
That wouldn't be a bad one, like, because there's a fella who come in and be happy to kind of play second fiddle and see if he can push Sturridge.
Yeah, he's still a potential level, is he, from what I understand?
Yeah,
that kid,
very much.
But you know what, I like any player that gets linked with Liverpool, I'm never really that familiar.
Yeah,
you can only kind of look up, but the fella looks good from what I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. Phil, where do you stand this?
I have a few names in my head that probably have been in my head for the last couple of seasons, as opposed to just now. I would have loved to see him sign Aubameyang when we went after Sturridge that time. And again, he'd be another player I think could fit into our system, and also play alongside Sturridge. So it's not just he could play as a two, he could play out wide, and if we need be, he can play central. And he's got a good goal scoring record, and he is undoubtedly talented. And whether Dortmund would sell him to us, be interesting, because they've lost Lewandowski and they've brought in two strikers in Adrian Ramos and Chiro Immobile. And Aubameyang is definitely one that's a fixture at the moment in their pre-season, has been scoring goals. But in terms of, can you pick a striker that you can play alongside, do be brilliant, score goals, or play on his own? He's definitely possibly, in my opinion anyway, the perfect one for us to sign it. probably cost us 25, 30 million now, to, and whether they'd sell, I don't know. But, you know, that's who was in my head. Lewis Muriel, someone that's been linked with us plenty of times as well. You know, again, similar to Aubameyang, can play wide in a tree. Very much the heir to Di Natale's throne and Udinese in terms of when they signed him and what he, you know, what he can bring to the side as well. I'd love to see him. We've been linked with Lovetzi. I'm not a huge fan of Lovetzi. I think he would look brilliant in terms of effort and work rate on the pitch. I don't think he'd score enough goals for us as either the backup central striker or as a wide striker. But the interesting one I'd probably like to see if we could have a nibble at Insigne of Napoli as well. You know, if you're talking about three strikers, three potential players who can play as wide. Now, Insigne wouldn't be able to play through the centre, but, you know, that type of thing. Wild card shout, if you're going to sign two players to say Borini goes, you're left with only two senior strikers. Lucas Barrios, bring him back from wherever the fuck he is at the moment, right? He has been and was a goal scorer when he was at Dortmund before Lewandowski was there.
Did he play at Benfica before? Am I making that up?
I don't know him from his Dortmund days. Okay. And he went off to China, and he hasn't had a great spell out there in terms of personal stuff and things like that. But, you know, maybe we could get him and one of the three I mentioned there for relatively low money. And that to me, if you had, you know, again, back up Lambert and Barrios backing up, say, an Elba or a Muriel and Sturridge, you'd have fucking a wealth. You'd have four really capable strikers there. Mm. Well, three.
Phil, how many goals are these fellas being scoring, like, you know, last season?
Well, Elba got close to 20. I think he got 18 in the Bundesliga last year.
But I remember just having a look across, you know, just to see if you can pick out names just across all the major leagues in Europe, and there's a serious shortage of strikers that are scoring goals, like that are scoring 20 plus
and
goals.
And that's why Boney is such an attractive option.
Yeah, now these are fellas that, like, are playing every single game.
We're looking at somebody, Lacazette, I think, is one of the few that we're linked with who has a plus 20. Yeah. He's got 23 goals last year.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, we're never going to replace Suarez. We say that all the time. But if you do bring in someone, you want to be bringing in a one out of every two games a goal sort of thing. And Boney provides that. But you're going to pay a premium for him, 20 million, you know.
Dave, moving backwards in the team a little bit to the fullback situation, which we've touched on before. We know we have Manquillo coming in. The Moreno thing, there's been kind of rumblings again today. We don't know how close to being done it is, having been told it was almost there. What is your thoughts on that in terms of starting the season, and have we adequate cover now if we do indeed get those two guys in?
If we get Moreno,
then
I think we're sorted at left back. I think that, you know, my feelings on Johnson are well established, but, you know, except that he's probably not going to go, then we're, I think, between Manquillo and Flanagan at right back, and even Kelly at a push, we could probably do it. Personally, and this is just me, I'd like another centre half, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think we're going to start. I don't think we're going to sign 11, 12 players. Mm-hmm. But personally, I would move both Toure and probably Quartes on, and then I'd bring a new right sided centre back in, you know, for competition with Skrtel and Lovren, you know, to play in that piece. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think, Rodgers obviously thinks that Skrtel with a better partner will be better. So I don't think we're going to sign anyone there. And then, you know, the other wild card is, you know, if we can't find this, and, you know, even as we're talking here, right, I mean, it's difficult to pick the one player that you could sign up front. You know, I think the ideal scenario would be to buy two. So let's say, you know, but if that doesn't happen, maybe we go and buy like a great central midfield player. Maybe you go and buy Vidal, or you go and buy Javi Martinez or something, and push Henderson into the final third, or push Coutinho, you know, play Coutinho more in the front three rather than the middle three.
Yeah.
So, you know, the one thing I always think, you know, it's been 2 years, I think, or 2.5 years, ever since Rodgers has been there. I think we've only signed two players that can only play in one position, right? One of them is Mignolet. You know, obviously, he's a goalkeeper. And actually, I forget who the other one is. Now I don't think about it. But two players that we signed.
That's a good point.
My point is,
the second player hasn't even broken into the team.
My second point is that, you know, he tends not to sign players like Bonnie, who could only play in one position. He tends to go against that. You know, he doesn't want to sign a player that can only play in one position.
Skillful Welsh Wiles moved away from the defence, which I was asking you to focus on, and back to fucking strikers.
Well, we should sign Moreno, but that's all we're going to sign. We're not going to sign anyone else now. We should have signed a goalkeeper, is who we should sign.
Jay Riley, talk to me a little bit about Moreno. Is there anything else or anything new, or what's the latest on that deal?
It's a strange one with Moreno, because there's been an offer on the table for pretty much all summer for him, and it's dragged on now for 2 months, hasn't it? And it's a bit of a joke, really. But I mean, I said again, you know, on this a while ago about Bertrand, and you know, it was clear to see that we were trying for Bertrand, but Chelsea just wouldn't sell at the price. They were asking silly money. We couldn't agree with them, and in the end, he went out on loan to Southampton.
Yeah,
you know, it's. I'm happy about that, and I'm pretty sure most Liverpool fans are too, because, I mean, let's be perfectly honest, he wasn't really a player that the fans really wanted. But regarding Moreno, if we can get him for £16 million, which is the offer that we put on the table originally in May, it would be good, because obviously Seville wanted a lot more money than that. So the thing with Moreno, there's talk that they've got a Super Cup game, haven't they, against Real Madrid next week.
Yep.
And there's talk that they want to use him in that game, and they're probably going to try and keep hold of him until then, and then obviously they will sell to us the week after. But that's no good to us, really, because we want him for the opening day, don't we?
Yeah.
And that's what makes me think, again, with what I said about Lovren, you think to yourself, if we don't get Moreno until a couple of days before the start of the season, he won't have had time to integrate, you know, get used to his teammates and, you know, gel with the players, the personnel, you know, like the back line and stuff. And that is a concern for me. And like I say, if we do get him, which I'm pretty sure we will do now, it's a lot of money, isn't it, for a full back. I mean, I know you compare, we paid that for Glenn Johnson, didn't we, a few years ago. And obviously Man United paid a hell of a lot more money for Luke Shaw. That was a ridiculous transfer fee, in my opinion. But, you know, it's a case of, it's an area of the team that we need to strengthen in. We've struggled for years, haven't we, at left back? I mean, look at last season with Sissoko, getting him on loan, and Rodgers has never really fancied Enrique because he's a bit of a fucking head the ball, isn't he? Just that he's fucking brain dead like. And I think it's a case of, you know, we desperately need this left back, and it seems that it's going to be Moreno now. Well, you know, what another point that I think is quite funny with this Liverpool setup, and obviously I touched on before about the fact that Rodgers likes Skrtel, and we've got Saka, who's like a fan's favourite, and we've got Lovren now, who's coming in as a bit of a leader type. And it's mad to think that we could play a system where we play three centre-halves and two attacking wing-backs, do you know what I mean? You know the way the United system with Van Gaal's introduced. Liverpool have actually got the personnel. If we get Moreno on board, we've actually got the personnel to play that type of system as well, haven't we? But I do think we will get the Moreno deal over the line, and it may well be after the Super Cup game.
I mean, obviously, if people are going to keep coming into the club, there's going to have to be some people moving the other way. Now, the names that are most commonly linked with exits are Johnson, Enrique, Lucas, we know Asidi, we know Barini and Agger. Joe, on that list of names that we spoke about there, which of those guys do you see going, and which would you like to see going?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Funnily enough, the ones I want to see go are actually some of the ones that I like a little bit. I'll explain that now. I think what it is a lot of the ones like your Johnsons and maybe your Lucases, I don't really see them having much saleable value essentially at the moment. So although I'd really like, particularly Johnson, I think could do with a move, I don't think anyone's really going to pay anything that would help us get much more back in terms of replacements and whatnot. So I don't mind them being squad players, really. Whereas the ones I would like to go, or in particular, are Asidi and Barini. But it's funny, you know, I always think most football fans, and I definitely am, we're hypocrites, really. I mean, if it's a player I like and the club want to sell him, my attitude is, oh, fight for your place, lad. I really want you. You know, like Henderson, I was made up before for his place, and now he's come good. But because of the rate, say, Barini or Asidi, when they say they want to fight for the place, I'm like, oh, no. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I'm very much a hypocrite when it comes to that. I do respect that they do it, and I can see why. But for the good of the club, I think the money we could get for them could really be very helpful for going forward.
And Joe, would you consider what we've done so far? That's all we can judge it on. There's no point in trying to second guess what's going to come up. But so far, the business that's been done, would you consider this window to be a success, qualified success, or a bit of a disaster? Where would it stand for you?
Yeah, I'm a bit like Dave. I'm another sheep. a wolf in sheep's clothing. But no, I'd say qualified success, really. Yeah. If the Remy deal hadn't have fell through, I was made up, to be honest, up till then, because I really thought he was another key in that jigsaw. He was sort of like the perfect backup striker, versatile. Pacey offered us a lot. You know, I thought that was sort of a really smart signing. And the other signings I'm really happy with. I know a lot of people wanted, you know, a superstar, and obviously we'd all like that. But I think, essentially, I don't think we'll pay the wages these days, and I can understand why. And alongside that, I think we're not, in terms of the food chain, we're not at the very top of that food chain currently. And I think a lot of them top quality players wouldn't come. I think if we get in the Champions League next year, that'll change, because then it'll look like we're here to stay again.
Yeah, fair point. Andy, for you, so far the business success or qualified or a bit of a disappointment, or where is it?
Well, if it just stopped now and we started and the window shut, it'd be a disappointment.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, some of our signings haven't even kicked the ball yet. So haven't even kind of got to see Lallana in the red shirt and sort of said, right, yeah, there's something about, you know, him for us and over him. So it was the stop now, but I suppose we're only about two signings away from it being a really good window. And then obviously you have to see how these players get on.
Yeah.
It's disappointing that we kind of have to accept what Joe was saying there, but we probably won't get a superstar. Like, I mean, we said last season, if you get into the Champions League and all of a sudden we're shopping at on a higher shelf. But it doesn't seem to be the case, because you won't pay players 200 grand a week. You won't pay them just to walk into the club and collect 200 grand a week without some sort of performance related thing. So, and then we're saying now, well, you get into the Champions League next season. How long do we need to say that? So, like, we would have got all of these players pretty much playing, you know, Europa League football.
That's just what I'm thinking.
So, you know, when you sit down, when deep down you see other players move to other clubs, you're kind of thinking, why the fuck aren't Liverpool in for these players?
Yeah.
And in that way, you're kind of thinking, well, how are we going to challenge for the league unless we're buying the better players? But we have Rodgers, and, you know, at least he's picking these fellas now. And hopefully he's not being under the constraints. So he, kind of suspicious he might be, that he's been told, well, you can only get a certain kind of caliber player because we're not going to spend the money.
Yeah.
But if he's picking, you know, if he wants to strengthen the squad and not just buy one or two players, like just to kind of replace Suarez, and that's what Rodgers wants to do, then fair enough.
Yeah.
And we'll see how they get on. But at the moment, that just the straight answer is, if it was to close now, we'd be disappointed. But I think we're still only kind of a couple of signings away from it actually being a goal.
Yeah, fair enough. Dave.
And if we lose Moreno, that's going to be the biggest fuck up in history, because how can you be, you know, pursuing a player for the whole summer
and
not turn your attention away when you realise that this one isn't happening?
Yeah.
There's something stopping it. Liverpool either turn around and give in to them and go, right, fair enough, we want that man and take it. Or else you just move on.
Yeah.
It's just, to me at this stage, like,
it's very frustrating. Yeah. It sure is. Dave, you're a man who's always said, look, if Brendan gets the players he wants, now Andy's touching that, and again, we can't be 100% sure, but if Brendan gets the players he wants, then we have to just consider that to be a success, and we have to say, right, let him go, and we have to have a little bit of faith in that. Do you still stand by that, or has it been somewhat undermined?
No, I actually agree with a lot of what Andy said. I think it's a qualified success for me.
Yeah.
I think that I stand by that we should buy the players that the manager wants. And the manager wants Moreno. So if we don't get Moreno because of some Mickey Mouse, you know, money, you know, it will undermine everything that I've kind of been arguing, which is we pay what it takes to get the players the manager wants. If, you know, And that's why we pay 23 million for Lallana. That's why we pay this for Lovren, whatever. That's why we spend 10 million on a player we won't see for a year. It undermines that if we don't then go and get, you know, what is one of the critical signings that we need. I think the whole thing is split into two. So let me park the Suarez replacement thing for a minute, right? Last season, we came second, practically using a squad of 14 players, right? Our business so far has already increased that pool of players that the manager's comfortable using to 20, right? You bring a couple of the loan players in, we're up to 21, 22. So I think that has to be a success. We have, you know, you can debate the merits of whether we could have signed a better player for each of the players we signed, but that's the easiest thing in the world to do. The reality is we now have, the manager wants these players, we're assuming that, and I am assuming that, so therefore our squad is better. The second thing is our defence, if we sign Moreno, is better, which is the biggest thing we have to fix. By signing Lovren, Jean and Moreno, you've put three starters into the you know, this concept of starting 11. So we've improved 30% of our starting 11 by buying Moreno, Jean and Lovren. So that's got to be a success. Where we still have a lot to do is in the attacking third, where we need one, probably two, I think, real top quality, you know, players who are going to deliver goals and assists above and beyond what we already have within the squad. So for me, assuming we get Moreno done, we should get that done. Then it's just the Suarez question.
And you're not accepting Markovic as one of those two?
I think if you just look at the raw numbers of it, and we can debate where he sits in the pecking order, but Lambert is Aspas in terms of the numbers. Lambert replaces Aspas. Markovic replaces Alberto, right? Lallana, in terms of numbers, replaces Moses. And then you've got the Suarez issue. So we haven't signed a replacement for Suarez. That might end up being a striker. It might end up being a wide player. I think it should be two. So that's the piece that still hasn't been done. If we sign Moreno and no one else, it would be a disappointing window.
Very much a qualified success.
You want to be able to look at the squad and say there's a couple of world-class players in there.
Yes.
But you can't really say that.
Yeah, you can't.
Well,
yeah.
We haven't bought anyone. I think we have like Sterling and Coutinho and Sturridge who could be at that level.
Yeah, with potential to have world class. Yeah. And look, there's no doubt Sterling's going to get there.
Yeah.
At the moment, I think a team can nullify Sterling if he becomes our target man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas there's other players like Suarez was unplayable.
Yeah.
And that's the difference.
Yep, Phil.
Park the fucking positivity bus, right? It's a qualified failure so far.
Were we on a positivity bus? Because okay. I missed that.
The lads were saying it's a qualified success. Yeah. No, you can't park the Suarez thing. We haven't replaced Suarez, and Suarez was nearly the first out in the actual summer. The focus should have been to sort that out straight off the bat. We've signed lads who are injured. We're talking about business that's done and not business that's yet to be done. Our defence isn't stronger. From what we've seen of the players that have played so far, we've talked about it with the same deficiencies, same goals being conceded. We don't know about the likes of Markovic how they're going to adapt to the new league. Lambert just isn't at the races so far. We said he's replaced Aspas. Well, he's playing at the same level as Aspas played for us last season. In fact, he hasn't even done as much in pre-season as Aspas did last year. So if we're talking about has this business yet proved to be success or failure, when I'm looking at it, I'm more worried now than I should have been when we were signing the players. Because I thought, yeah, we were making decent signings, but we've got still a fucking massive gap in the front end of our pitch. Because like that, with the Sterling thing, last night they were able to stick two players out to nullify Sterling when he was running riot, right? And they were able to quieten him out of the game eventually because they didn't feel there was a threat coming from Lambert inside him. And the one thing that Suarez does and Sturridge does when Sturridge is fit is he'll occupy two of the centre-backs, which gives Sterling more space to operate in. It's not surprising that Sterling did so well when he had the better players around him when he was on the actual pitch itself. And as I said, it was a credit to him, the performance he put in last night with Lambert playing in the form that he's playing in. So for me, as it stands at this moment, the window's been a failure. And we've possibly strengthened in terms of Emre Can. And definitely it'll be interesting to see how Lovren gets on. I rate him as a defender, so I think he is an upgrade in terms of what we have as centre-backs. once he can play on as a right sided one alongside Sacco.
So as it stands, you reckon it's a bit of a disaster, or a little bit?
I'll hold for a disaster because we still have the body of the team that did so well last year. My issue is, if we ain't going to replace the 30 odd goals that Suarez has done, we have to stop 20 odd goals at the other end, and we haven't strengthened enough there yet.
What about summer of 2004, which, unless memory fails me, didn't we get Xabi Alonso and Garcia in quite late? Late enough that you wouldn't really know what effect they were going to have on the team.
Yeah.
So
Look, as I said, we're talking about business done
to date,
right?
Yeah. So it's rescuable.
There's still a month to go. You signed two quality attackers. We signed the fullbacks that we're talking about, and Manquillo does prove to be good enough to go into the first team.
That's a big ask.
No, but that's what I'm saying. That's what we need. That turns this window now, and then the likes of, you know, with the injuries and stuff that's there. If the team can get off to a decent enough start with the players that have come in, then it allows the likes of Lallana and Markovic a bit longer bedding in time, so that they won't be seen as flops or successes straight off the bat. Because the one thing that happens, and it's even come down with this Lambert thing, right? You look at the performances he's putting in, and they're simply not good enough. And straight away, I've just done it myself there. I'm saying to myself, geez, I'm looking at another Fernando Morientes here. You know what I mean? What looks like a good signing, but just doesn't happen for him, because I think the pressure in it's not so much his ability in this case. I think Lambert is dealing with a massive amount of psychological pressure he's putting on himself, as opposed to what the fans or what the team or anything like that. He wants to be a success so much, he's lost the natural rhythm in his game, and he just looks like a fish out of water. He looks like somebody that's won a competition to play.
Yeah, but like, you always use that one. Think about Lambert, he's kind of buzzing in his head at the moment. He needs to just settle down. I'm sure when he's playing a bit of Premier League football again, he'll just find his feet and he'll relax. And look, when he signed, I don't think anyone was expecting him to be scoring bags full of goals. We were just thinking, that's a nice kind of player to come on, you know, with 10, 15 minutes to go, and you might get a goal out of him, you know, with the experience. But don't read too much into these performances in pre-season. It's a big thing for Lambert to come into Liverpool, and these friendlies aren't just friendlies to him.
I agree, Andy. And as I said, I'm casting a judgment as of now. And not an actual judgment, because that will only be determined by the time we get to Christmas, because then we'll know where our league position is and what influence these players have had in the absence of Suarez and that team.
The pressure won't be on Lambert either. Like, you know, the focus will be away from him straight away. He's only a £4 million, you know, pound signing, and he's going to come in and be a bit part player. He won't feel the pressure he's probably feeling just at the moment. And I don't think fans are going to be getting us back, because we haven't went out and spent £35 million.
But the issue will be is if we don't bring in other strikers. And Dave, you've even agreed with me on this one. If we're left starting the season or finishing the transfer window with Borini, Lambert, and Sturridge as our three main strikers, that's a massive issue for us. Now, do I think that will happen? No, but you know that you're looking at a cycle of doom there.
Cycle of them.
I think there's an acknowledgement we have work to do. I think that's where we agree. Where we don't agree is that I don't see how Markovic, Lallana and Lambert over Moses, Alberto and Aspas could be judged as a failure. I just don't understand how that can be judged as a failure. That baffles me that you could say that's a failure. Acknowledging we have loads to do. We have loads to do in the final third. And if we did not replace Suarez, then I'd be right on your bus, brother. I would be on the negativity bus.
You wouldn't. You wouldn't.
Well, I'd be on there for a stop, and then I go. But, you know, I think we are. I think we have a lot to do. I think that we have to sign. We have to, and I get your point that we haven't signed the fullbacks yet, whereas I'm probably speaking as if we have. So yeah. I get that point. But those three players versus the three players they've replaced, That's good business. You know, for me, that's good business.
Right.
Like, we brought in a good few goals. Like, you know what I mean? Look, we had a, what's his name on the other week, raving about Markovic, saying that he's, you know, he is a class act.
Marco.
But, so you'd have to assume he's got goals in him, you know, whether it's 5 or 10 goals in him. Lallana, 5 or 10 goals in him. Lambert, a few goals when he comes on or whatever. I think you're going to see Sterling score a lot more goals this season. I think you're going to see a really, really good season out of Coutinho.
Mm-hmm.
I really do think you're going to see, because he could be the man, you know, to replace Suarez in that sense that, like,
if he steps up with goals.
Yeah,
as well.
He steps up with a few goals. He's that class act.
Yeah.
That Suarez.
It's really just a case of what side of the qualified fence you're falling on. Yeah. I don't, as I said to you, I'm seeing it as business done. I'm not happy with the business done. Mm. Like, I'm happy with a couple of the players we've signed, but I'm not happy with the way it's panning out at this moment in time.
Yeah.
Get the right players in now in the last month of the window and it becomes a success.
So basically it just comes down to your personality type. We've got Dave, who's a positive, happy man, yeah, and we've got you, who's a miserable bastard.
I was at the Postman Pat movie this morning. Anyone would be fucking murderous after watching that shit.
Yeah.
Well, no, just look at what we still have. Look what we still have, and you know, it's a young squad is going to improve. And I mean, we've lost 30 goals in Suarez, but we've probably gained about 15, 20 goals, you know, with other players, what we've brought
you
in
hope.
And what...
You hope.
Well, yeah, it is, but it's a realistic hope. It's not like we're clutching our straws here.
Andy's going the opposite way on the positive bus.
You've got a back four that conceded 50-odd goals last year. Yeah. You'd have to imagine we're bringing in Moreno and Lovren that we're going to cut at least fucking 3 or 4. You know, but if we can cut, you know, if you can cut sort of 10 goals even.
Yeah.
You know, you've already bridged that gap that Suarez has left.
Hmm.
Now, there's still three players that need to be brought in. And then it's a successful window.
Yeah.
And we can kind of look forward to the players that have come in. But don't forget the players that are still there and the players who can improve.
Excellent. Well, I'll go with that.
And I think Henderson can develop into being a bit more clinical in front of goal, because him and Alan, you know, bottle it in front of goal.
Hmm.
But, you know, as time goes on, I don't know about Alan, whether he will, but I think Henderson can become a bit more clinical.
Excellent. Well, look, let's look forward in the last section of the show to the last remaining pre-season game, which is against Dortmund. Assuming that we might actually have another little bit of business done at that point, and that maybe one or two of the people who are crocked will be mended at that point. Is it safe, lads, to assume that Brendan will look to get his first choice 11 out on the team, out in the pitch against Jurgen Klopp's men? And if so, what does that first 11 look like? Joe, what is your theory on that? Do you see, what do you see that potential first 11, season starting first 11 looking like? Or do you think he will at all?
Yeah, I think he'll definitely try and get as close to his first 11 as he can. I think you'll see it as a good opportunity to get them out there. I think, obviously, assuming there's no signings before then, I think obviously it looks like it'll be Lambert up top, and then potentially I think it'll be a combination of Sterling and Coutinho supporting Lambert, and then a midfield three probably of Gerrard sitting deep with Chan and Henderson being the legs for them essentially, and that to me is very exciting really. I think that'll be... That might help some of the defensive problems. Obviously, I agree with the lads that a lot of the problems are more individual errors. But I think at times, in terms of the system, I think having that extra, you know, Chan as well as Henderson would be a real benefit in general. And then hopefully, I'm hoping that a lot of them individual errors, if he's as good a leader as he's meant to be, Lovren, I'm hoping he will help some of them other players to eradicate them by essentially, like Carragher used to do, you know, telling them where to go, when to step up, you know, who to be marking. Obviously, I know he's not going to babysit them, but I think if he can provide that guidance, I think some of them definitely need at times, and the odd rollicking, I think that could really be another significant positive step forward.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting point you make there. Jay, would you agree that if we are to see something like the starting 11, that it might be time for a Lovren debut against Dortmund?
I think Rodgers would like to play as pretty much what a starting 11 would be for the opening day, but you've got to consider the fact that Sturridge might not be 100% fit either, because obviously he's going to want him to play against Southampton. But if he's not quite ready against Dortmund, then there's no way he'll risk him. Regarding Lovren, I said before, I'm not too sure whether or not he'll start against Southampton, purely because he won't have even have trained properly with the first team squad. But it's clear to see Lovren will definitely play, because he needs to play, doesn't he? He needs to play games.
Yeah.
Regarding Moreno, he probably won't even have been signed by then anyway. Even if he has been, he won't have trained, so I can't see him playing. Manquillo might play potentially, but again, he's another one where it's just a case of he won't have even trained with the squad, will he? So I think Rodgers would like to play pretty much the 11 that he'd go with against Southampton, but it's circumstantial really, isn't it? It just depends on injuries. It's again, you know, who's he going to go with in midfield? Because Joe Allen's done okay in pre-season. I don't think he played very well last night, but he played really well against AC Milan. He's played quite well on the tour. So is he going to start, or is it going to be Emre Can? I mean, to be honest with you, I've been very impressed with Emre Can. He looks, for £10 million, he could be very, very good for us. And personally, I would go with him. But maybe he'd go with, because it's obviously tried and trusted last season with Allen, Henderson and Gerrard, he might just stick with them three, but it will be interesting. I think it's a sellout, and Borussia Dortmund have got fantastic fans, haven't they? I'm pretty sure they'll bring a few thousand fans to the game. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. But, you know, it's one of them, again, it's all about fitness, and it doesn't really matter too much about the results. But I think Rodgers would like to play pretty much most of the players that are going to start in Southampton, yes.
Andy, we'll come in a little while talking about something Jay touched on there, which is the result and whether or not it matters. But how frustrating is it, given like the amount of injuries and all that kind of stuff that's going on and the business still to be done, that we probably won't see anything really resembling like what Brendan would like to start the season?
Yeah, like it's not the be-all, end-all. Like this is, we're now talking about the team that's going to start against Southampton. It's only a couple of weeks away. It's not necessarily the team that's going to be Rodgers' team come the end of the window,
yeah,
because we've got the injuries. I suppose if you looked at the end of last season, you were kind of looking at the very beginning of this season, you'd be thinking, right, hopefully Johnson's gone because he's about as reliable as a Brazzer, period. you'd be sort of saying that apart from maybe Sacco, you'd see a fully new back four. We're not going to see that now, so we have to sort of accept certain things now, and that Johnson's probably going to start against Southampton. So, like, that is frustrating, but it is only kind of a couple of league games before these players start to appear, you know, and we start to see what Rodgers wants as forced 11. So, what a team we see against Dortmund would be about as close as we can possibly get, with the exception probably of Sturridge, that he might rest them and get them to start the season. But you would have to imagine that the team we see go out against Dortmund that starts or gets the most minutes, you know, is going to be that team.
And personnel-wise, of the people that have been mentioned there by the two lads, would Emre Can be in your starting?
Absolutely, yeah. They, without a shadow of doubt, Can, Henderson and Gerrard. Now, that's a trio that's, to me, in my head, it's just going to work really, really well.
And what does that do to Philippe Coutinho in terms of starting position, or does he have one in that lineup?
Well, he might play, you know, kind of up top front three attack, depending on the formation or whatever. You might have the three in behind a top man, but you know, Coutinho absolutely has a part to play, but I think it could be in a more advanced position.
A more advanced role. Dave, what do you think about this idea? And look, we're talking there about the players that might play. The system is equally important. Have you seen evidence over the pre-season of anything changing at all, or any sort of acknowledgement that we will have to change system?
I think that the signing of Jean and the playing of Jean in the midfield three is a tacit acknowledgement that we need to be a little bit more solid in there, you know. And I think that he seems to be, even when he's played with Gerrard, and he hasn't played a lot with Gerrard, but even when he's played with Gerrard, he seems to be given a little bit more kind of freedom to go and to kind of go where he wants, him and Henderson. I'm with Andy. I think that, you know, for me, if you're writing down now, you know, your best team, Emre Can is in that. In your midfield is Gerrard, Henderson and Can. And to be honest with you, then in the front positions, you have competition. You know, I don't think anyone's a nailed on starter apart from Sterling. Sterling, you know, the answer to everything.
So Coutinho's not a nailed on starter for you?
I don't think he is. I think he's caught between two stools a little bit, right? When we play, if we want to be a bit more solid in midfield, he can't play deeper.
Yeah.
And he doesn't score enough, or hasn't historically scored enough to start in the front three.
Yeah.
So I think it's a big season for Coutinho, and I kind of think he'll blossom, and I think he'll actually have a very good season. But we're going to play, a minimum this season of 45 games, probably. So there's plenty of games to go around. But he'd probably start against Southampton for me, because I think Sturridge would be fit. I'd play Sterling and Coutinho either side of him. Yeah. Midfield three of Henderson, Jean and Gerrard. I'd play Lovren if he's fit. And I'd play him against Dortmund. So I would expect against Dortmund, to the system we play, even if all the players aren't there, would be the system we play against Southampton. And I would play Gerrard, Hintz and Ashan, because I think that's the engine room of the team. And it'll give a platform for, if we sign a Moreno, for example, we can afford to have an attacking left back because we've got three real powerhouses in the midfield.
Yep.
So that's how I would do it.
Phil, that's interesting that Dave talks about the personnel there again. If you want to come back to that, feel free to do it. But in terms of the setup, how do you see it going? And do you think the Dortmund game is a good test of it?
Yeah, look, the lads have covered off the you know, potential lineups and the way we go. Mm. Like me personally, I love the last friendly before the season kicks off. Generally, that is the one where you get an idea of what the first 11 is going to be. And like I love when we play German teams. We played Leverkusen 2 years ago, and Sterling made his debut that day. And you know, probably wasn't debut, but you know what I mean. He came on and he was electric that day. Actually, was that when Hodgson was there?
2 years ago, it couldn't have been.
Well, last season we played Leverkusen.
We played Leverkusen last year. We played him 3 years ago or something.
Possibly 3 years ago.
Yeah, when Hodgson was there and Sterling came on and scored a belter. I remember that one. That stuck in the memory.
Yeah. A good Hodgson memory,
Anyway, I do genuinely love, of all the preseason friendlies, this is the one that you know, sort of does it for me in terms of watching and stuff like that. Generally, you get a packed house at Anfield, and
this opposition is deadly as well, isn't it?
Yeah. You know. Like I do follow Dortmund in the Bundesliga, so it's great. Like I'm looking at them, and I'm as excited to see who's going to play for Dortmund as I am as well for Liverpool, because you've got Elby, they've signed Gintner and Durham as well, defenders. They'll probably get a run out. You'll see Subotic as well. I don't think Weidenfeller will play. I think Langerak's a decent goalkeeper for Dortmund. So, you know, I'm as excited. It's two teams I want to see, and it's like you're going to get a good game of football out of it, because Dortmund aren't going to, you know, come over and just, you know, let Liverpool run riot because it's their last game before the season kicks off. They want to win as well. It's probably the highest profile opposition they've played in pre-season. You know, they bet Rappers Willie 10-0 there at the weekend. So there's a bit of a buzz inside me for this game, the same way as the United game last night. There was something to get up for, to watch that game.
It's good for Brendan too, this, isn't it? Like, I know we've had good opposition in the pre-season, but with the exception of Van Gaal, the rest of the managers wouldn't just be on that level, whereas this man is definitely.
Yeah,
and it's going to be interesting ahead of the Champions League to see that kind of a matchup for him, won't it?
Yeah. Like, again, you know, Klopp is arguably one of the best managers in Europe at this moment of time. He's getting doing what he did at Dortmund is nothing short of phenomenal. Like, even getting to the Champions League final, winning two league titles over Bayern Munich when they were starting to come through under Henkes. You know, he's just a great tactician, and he's also he believes in the right way football should be played. So you've got two real football coaches, and the way Rodgers has progressed at Liverpool, his style of play, etc., has reminded me a lot of the way the German teams have played. So I think, you know, you're looking at a style in a certain way that's mimicked the German. You know, it's almost like the masters coming to be tested against the students, and how far have the students grown in terms of their ability to play that style of play against them. And I'm genuinely buzzing for this game. The only thing, like, you worry about, like, you look at the quality of attack that Dortmund have, and you see Johnson again there on the pitch. So, you know, they're gonna, especially no, looking at the strengths of their forward line, the pace, they'll pull it wide and they'll attack him. And you know, this, the thing that we're talking about Klopp, he's going to identify these weaknesses in the team, and he'll want to punish them, because it's the same thing he's going to do on a week in, week out basis in the Bundesliga or in the Champions League, just as Rodgers will be looking for weaknesses in them and really pitting themselves against it.
I think you make an interesting point, Trevor, about the quality of opposition that he's picked on pre-season. It's almost like he's gone, what might the Champions League group look like?
Yeah, you know what I mean?
He's gone, you know, you might have an Olympiacos in there, and then we're going to be in with two or three strong sides. Now, I don't think Milan are in there, but, you know, City, United, you know, he's kind of done that. And Dortmund's then the other one. So
even Olympiacos as the weaker team in the group, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Plus, you know, we've got to get this friendly out of the way probably as the last piece of the Royce deal, you know, to get that over. So, you know,
we're dumping for Elba.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Didn't like that.
You totally screwed me there, I have to say.
Gone off the agenda again. Trevor's all over the shop.
I can't.
The reading of the words is everywhere.
It's not in front of me, so I'm lost. Dave, come back to the microphone. Talk to me about, because I'm worried that this is potentially, Phil's talking about Johnson getting roasted, this may not go the way we want to go in terms of the result. It may be another defeat, which might end up with us rounding off the preseason with two. Psychologically, does that have any effect?
For me personally,
not for you, Dave.
Well, for the team, yes. Does it have a psychological effect? I don't think so. First of all, look, we are going to play lots of good teams this season, and we are going to have to start playing them and matching them and beating them, and it's never too early to start doing that. Second thing, we're a great side. We're a very good side, lads, and I see no reason to fear anybody that we go to play. You know, so if we got a tank in, then yes, it would have a psychological impact, I'm sure, on the players. But like, that's not going to happen. Yeah. You know, all right, we don't have Suarez, but the rest of that side is plenty good enough to put it up against any side that we were going to play. I'd back us against anyone. You know, I really would. Mm. So I'm not worried about it. I don't think the players would be worried about it. I don't think we might, if we lost, we might lose by the odd goal. We might draw, might win. That's the way it goes, you know. But no, I don't think it'll have a psychological impact. Just like I don't really think that, you know, the result last night would have a psychological impact. I think our defeats to United are getting more meaningless every year, you know. I think if you think 3 years ago they beat us in the league and the cup, you know, then the year after that they beat us in the league. Mm-hmm. Last year they just beat us in the Carling Cup, and now it's just pre-season.
So the International Champions Cup of the world.
So after next year we'll go undefeated against them.
That's a beautiful pattern you've just identified there. Joe, for yourself, is there any significance to a potential defeat here, or what's the importance of a win in your estimation?
Yeah, I think for me, I'd echo pretty much everything Dave said there. I don't think there's massive psychological importance to these things, but if there is any, I would say to some degree it's not necessarily the results, it's the performance. And like, you know, we've all seen us have games where, like, we've won 1-0 and we've been awful. And sometimes I'm actually more encouraged when, obviously, I'd rather us win and win convincingly, but sometimes there's games where we've actually lost, where I've come away thinking, God, we're really looking like we're developing here. We really look impressive. And on a day when them chances go in, we'll win 5-1 sorts of things. So I don't think it'll be massive either way, really. Obviously, it is nice to round off with a win, but looking back through Liverpool's history, and there's people who obviously know it better than me, but there's been plenty of times where we've had awful pre-seasons and then we've gone and won trebles or European Cups and whatnot. And there's other times we all remember where we've been, you know, imperious in pre-season and then we've lost the first few games. So I don't think it's massively important personally, but obviously any boost is welcome.
Delightfully balanced view from you there, Joe. Andy, to finish us out, what's your take on it?
Yeah, I think a good pre-season gives you an edge. Psychologically, you know, you want your team in a kind of women. You want your team in a lot of women. That's what you want. For pre-season, just get a lot of women. you want them with a winning mentality going into the start of the season. So I think it is quite significant. Now, the only thing about United last night, played them off the park for most of the game and bossed the midfield, and there's a lot to take from it. It wasn't truly reflective losing it, and it all will all depend against Dortmund. Maybe we'll play absolutely fantastic and, you know, all we're missing is kind of Sturridge there that could have scored a couple of goals and we lose by the odd goal, but you can kind of take something from.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's hope we get exactly that then, chaps. We'll finish that for now. Some admin to finish then. We start, as we always do, with a mention for Astro Park. For 5-7 aside football, this is the place to be, so get on and book your game with www.astropark.ie. Our website, lfcdaytrippers.com, is the place to be for lots of deadly articles. No excuses. Get yourself on there and read some of the stuff that's on there at the moment. It's really, really good stuff. Pay attention on match day, the Dortmund game, and get your copy of We Are Liverpool, the new fanzine, issue number 2. You can find out the details of how to get that, how to subscribe to it online. And don't forget, you can buy it on the day from some of the sellers around the ground.
Yeah, I think Neil, who looks after it, is going to be at the corner of the cop anyway. I think that's what he said. He'll be selling the actual fanzine itself.
Actually, yeah. And we'll tweet plenty of links over the course of the week. Yeah. So keep an eye on our Twitter.
That's because
well.
me and Trevor are on there.
Yeah, we're in it, so we're going to push. Your day trippers tonight were Andy Young, Dave Thomas, Jay Riley, Joe Simpson, Phil Casey and myself, Trev Downey. Oh, right. I'll do that again. So, have you got
one second, Trev?
Yes, mate.
I'm sorry, I don't want to ruin this. Would they be all right to not go first on this one? Just I'm a little bit nervous.
Yeah, sure. No worries, fella. No worries. Jade.
Oh, man, I've got a fucking acre of outtakes. I'm fucking bollocks now.
I'm sorry, Joe, but this is all being recorded, fella. You are fucked.
Pull the outtakes on your...